The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. Yeah! I'm your host, Tim DLGG. And I'm back this week off my trip to the Dallas, Texas area for Dallas Comic Con.
Wait, you were gone? When did that happen?
It's got jokes.
Lots of them.
I did tune into the majority of the show last week. I had it on in the background as I was packing. So good job by you gentlemen holding down the fort for me.
Yay!
And we have a full house again here this week. You've already just heard from at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Yay!
Hi, Mom.
Go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. We also got at agent underscore 70.
What's up, everybody?
And at Roddy Cat on Twitter is also here with us.
Yay!
What's up, introduction here?
Oh, no.
Oh, no! The gremlins!
Wake up again.
Oh, come on.
For those that, of course, can't listen to the pre-show before we actually hit record, Roddy Cat was having some audio issues, and we had got it fixed before we started recording, and of course, hit record, and
yes.
Comes back.
Lovely.
I'll just do the rest of the show in sign language.
Oh, no!
Okay. Type into the chat, we'll read out what you say.
Time to upgrade your Packard Bell computer to something a little more.
No!
I would make a Windows 10 joke, but I think Doug is on Windows 10, I assume.
I am on Windows 10. Yeah, it works great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account, at CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. As to your circles on Google+, go to google.com/plus symbol theclicknation. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and youtube.com/theclicknation. If you want the feed just for the Comic Book Chronicles podcast, you can go to the bit.ly link, bit.ly/cbcronpod. We are a part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to their website, cspn.us, and check out all the other great, wonderful podcasts on the CSPN. And buy some of our Comic Book Chronicles merchandise by going to the Redbubble site, redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. We record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you're ever online and want to check out the show live, you can check us out. Go to theclicknation.com/live. And make sure to use the hashtags Comic Book Chronicles and CBCron on your favorite social media websites. So before I get into the news, I'll just do my very, very quick recap of Dallas Comic Con.
You mean unlike my longer recaps of all the cons I went to in 2015?
I liked your article, actually. It was nice and concise. It wasn't super long. You hit all the important points and talked about the different creators you met and the experiences with the different venues.
Yeah, that's what's important to me. You know, we need to tell the audience where to find this. That's at www.theclicknation.com. It is I believe it's one of the lead stories at this point. It may have been pushed down by now, but head there and read my recap on the four cons I was able to make it to in 2015. And, you know, I had a lot of things to say, and I made sure to put in the disclaimer that New Jersey Comic Expo did provide me with press credentials, so, you know, I didn't have to pay to go to that one, except for the tolls to get to New Jersey.
When I finish with the redesign for the website, I think I will have a sort of like trending topic section where I can keep stuff posted up, so.
Sure enough. Thanks to Doug for putting up visuals of the website and the article. You know, one of the things, just very quickly, one of the things I wanted to touch on very quickly, and you may have experienced this yourself at Dallas Comic Con, is that I started to get more familiar with some cosplayers and what they do and their experience at these cons. What kind of people did you run across in Dallas?
So in Dallas, to start with, I got there an hour or so after the con started. I went to get my press badge. Someone, one of the staffers, was very nice enough to give me a tour of the facilities. It was at the Irving Convention Center, kind of odd-shaped building from the outside, but inside it was four stories. First floor was Artist Alley. Second story was sort of like an eatery area. Third floor was the cosplayers, and fourth floor was where the celebrities were having their lines for the meet and greets and whatnot. So celebrities that were there were the Amell cousins, Robbie, and I forget the other one.
Steven
Amell.
Come on, that's Alex.
Yeah, I would say the main one. Steven and Robbie Amell. Diggle was there. John Barrowman, a.k.a. Merlin, Malcolm Merlin. Will Friedle from Boy Meets World. Young Bruce Wayne from Gotham were all there. I took a couple pictures from inside that sort of area where the lines were set up. I didn't actually get in any of the lines to speak to any of the celebs because you probably had to pay to get your picture and autograph and whatnot done, and I don't care that much. So I just kind of took pictures from the periphery. I recorded some quick audio, like 2-minute audio interviews with Joe Eisma, the artist on Image Comics' Morning Glories. Who else did I talk to? Hold on, let me check my list here. I don't want to get any names incorrect. Artist Lawrence Reynolds, and I talked to John Hughes from Overground Comics, who we've discussed some of their comics on the show previously. I saw, I think last week, Doug had talked about Tinker from Overground Comics, I believe.
Indeed.
And a couple weeks ago, we also discussed Plus Ultra, and I had a nice long convo with John. I wish I had could have turned the recorder on the minute we started talking, because I think we talked for like 20 minutes overall. But
yeah, I got to get better about that type of stuff too.
At the end, I asked him if he would record some stuff for me, so we did the quick little 2-minute discussion. But he was such a good salesman that for $20, I bought their whole line of comics. It's like 7 issues total, like a couple issue 1 and 2s of some different books, with a bunch of number 1s. So at some point, I'm going to run down them all and read them and hopefully get my thoughts on future episodes and write-ups on theclicknation.com. And I also told him that my plan is to send him the audio from the times we've talked about his book so they can have it for their reference. And I need to get on his email list, so whenever they have review copies, he'll send them over. So that's on my to-do list this weekend. Besides that, not too much else to talk about. I sat in on a cosplay panel, and there was a comic book creators panel with Steve Irwin, Mike Perkins, and 2 more gentlemen. So I'll have a quick write-up about that. I took a couple notes during both panels. But okay. All in all, pretty good first con for getting press pass. It helped out a lot because there was the public could only take escalators up stories 1 through 4, but press could go up the elevator, so it saved a lot of time.
Nice,
because there were lines for the escalator.
Yeah, I believe it. That's a very different experience being on a multi-floor con. You know, that's very much like New York Comic Con, where the escalators can get very jammed. But I don't believe press at New York Comic Con, you know, can avoid that.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully I can get press passes next year, and then I'll learn.
We're holding out hope for Heroes Con, waiting to hear back from the organizers over that con.
Yeah. Well, now we can say that the Comic Book Chronicles has gotten credentials to New Jersey Comic Expo and Dallas Comic Con.
Yes, we can. So.
Building our resume, as it were.
Yep. And actually, I'm going to see, now I think about it, since I do some freelance writing for some other websites, I wonder if I could like pull some strings and get credentials through them. So I need to check that out as well.
Nice.
But yeah, that's it.
I was about to say, for those who are able to watch the YouTube show, Dirt is going through some of the slideshow galleries I put together. These are obviously not all the pictures I took, but I tried to be very judicious about what I put on the site.
I love this photo because it's like, okay, Jurassic World up here, right, in the back, and you've got God of War standing, right, here, and there's this woman right over his shoulder, and she's got this look on her face like, I don't know what this dude's deal is.
Yeah,
she's
pretty much.
Walking through, and she's just looking like, what's up with this guy?
The kid looks kind of freaked out as well.
Yeah. That's very funny. The kid is probably like, why are all these people stopping to take this person's picture?
Why isn't he wearing clothes?
Questions that need answers.
Seriously.
And what's up with this dude over here?
Oh, no idea, dude.
I was going to say, his hair looks like Goku.
I see what you're taking a picture of here. You're just trying to disguise it with this guy of war.
Oh, no. I had no idea what that person is dressed as. That's funny. Mm-hmm. That is funny. Although, hidden in these pictures are actual friends of mine who are cosplaying.
Mm.
Yeah.
Although,
in the New York Comic Con pictures.
One thing, you need to rotate your photos.
I did rotate them. But what's funny is, I rotated them within the WordPress gallery. But when I put them into the slideshow, they reverted to this. And it's kind of weird. Mm. You know, it's like a setting I probably have to change. But I wanted to get this posted before the holiday weekend was over. Exactly. Before the holiday weekend was over, because that was my goal, was to at least get it up before, you know, as, you know, the way I started the article was in honor of TimDog98 making it to Dallas Comic Con, our first con of 2016. I might as well finally get up my summary of our travels, of my travels, on the convention trail in 2015. Hopefully, like Dirt was saying last week, I finally get my act together and write about this a little bit more promptly so I can do it as they come.
Once again, great job by Agent 70.
Yeah, go and take a look. You know, there's lots of cool little tidbits about my experience.
All right. And let's see. Comic book cinematic news of the week. Stephen Lang is campaigning for a role as Cable in Deadpool 2. Who all saw Deadpool, by the way?
I have not seen it yet.
I have not gone yet.
My plans fell through. It was also freezing cold in New York last weekend.
It's been sold out.
Really?
To the point where if you go like 40 minutes before the movie to try to buy a ticket, you end up having to buy a ticket to the next showing.
Wow.
And it's been like that all, you know, even yesterday, New Comic Book Day, people were coming in and talking about how they went, and it was just a packed theater full of people. So, you know, I'll wait a little bit. I do want to see it. I really want to see it. My wife actually wants to see it too, and she usually doesn't care much for a lot of the movies. But you know, we'll go see it at some point. I just hate being elbow to elbow with everybody inside the movie theater.
Even for a matinee showing, right?
Yeah.
I was going to say it's definitely benefiting from positive word of mouth.
Well, and one of the biggest openings ever.
Sure,
that kind of helps. Yeah.
So I saw it Friday night in Dallas. Great. That's about all you can really say. I'm going to probably try to see it again this weekend.
Nice.
So Stephen Lang wants to be Cable.
He wants to jump on that gravy train.
The Supergirl Flash crossover set pick reveals Silver Banshee's TV look. Star Wars Episode 8 is now filming. Dun, 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 dun. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 cast revealed. Kurt Russell and Elizabeth Debicki joined the Marvel sequel.
Hey, Roddy, did you have a chance to put in the Mantis casting news?
Mantis?
Yes.
No, I did not see that.
The guy in the wheelchair who builds the suit that allows him to become a superhero?
I did not see that one at all.
That's funny. So I'm fairly certain that I don't know if it's official, Palm Clementief cast as Mantis, but that might be old news. I gotta make sure to double check that.
I don't know who Mantis is, so.
Oh, that Mantis.
Oh, yeah, it is confirmed.
No,
yes,
it's actually confirmed. Yeah, that was a while ago, I thought.
No, it says a day ago it was confirmed.
Okay, because I remember we talked about her being, maybe that was just her being looked into for it. So, and this is the confirmation, like you said.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, director James Gunn has confirmed French actress Palm Clementief will play Mantis in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's sweet. And I'm sitting here, I was like, I got excited because I was thinking about what Dirt was talking about. I was like, wait, they're bringing back Mantis? I'm like,
good job.
I know, right? Wouldn't that be the greatest thing ever?
Yes.
Totally. I would like that show.
Mantis was dope. I like that show.
All right. That's funny.
there's some buzz going around that Netflix may revive Young Justice for season 3 if the, I guess you call them ratings for streaming of seasons 1 and 2 go well.
Which pretty much what Wiseman was saying what, last week or week before last, whichever, when we talked about it.
I still don't know if I believe this, though.
I mean, you know, you got to kind of put it out there, you know?
It's an option now because of the greater exposure that Netflix has for original programming.
Yeah.
You know, now that they've kind of proven themselves as a viable location for original programming, why not put something like this on Netflix?
I just wonder, does DC want to have this out there when they've got all the little geared towards kid stuff on Cartoon Network with Teen Titans Go and was it Young Justice action show launching later this year?
Well, yeah, but that would be where the difference lies, though, because this will be like, hey, this show was already out and you're just getting another season. I mean, it's not like Netflix hasn't done that. But by the way, how do I sound?
You're better.
Okay. Yeah. It's not like Netflix has had some weird picks and still have some to come out of, you know. And this, I don't think it would affect the stuff that they're doing on TV, is basically what I'm trying to get to.
Well, and it's also, Netflix is branching out into more original programming, including they have cartoons in the work. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the big things is Voltron.
Yep.
That's, you know, the big announcement from a couple weeks ago. So they probably are going through a lot of stuff saying, okay, well, what can we work with? And knowing how rabid the fan base was for Young Justice, if they can bring the numbers in line, that would make sense to jump on it as here's something original that's going to draw in people who, you know, there are a lot of people that still don't subscribe to Netflix in this day and age, as crazy as that sounds.
Right.
So there are some more people to pull in. They did it with Longmire to grab an older audience, and now this is going to grab an audience that maybe they signed up for Daredevil and they watched all that within a month and then canceled the subscription.
This is a way to bring them back.
Something new to entice them with.
Except that Daredevil's on its way back very soon, so hopefully it'll just be something else for them to watch and so they don't cancel it again right away.
Well, yeah, but if they can get enough original releases that you're getting something every 2 months,
right?
Then a lot of people will just be like, oh, I'll keep it instead of canceling it and renewing it, you know, 3 or 4 times a year.
Exactly.
I am really glad that they haven't, because a lot of people have been wanting a lot of shows to come back through Netflix, and I've been the first one to say they probably shouldn't do that for a whole lot of them. This one I wouldn't be too opposed to, but if they didn't do it, that's fine.
Okay.
Anthony Mackie is not down for a solo Falcon movie.
Okay.
Which is fine, because there probably would never be one anyway.
Oh, no.
Just like the Black Widow movie that people have been asking for. Limitless, the TV show, is doing something comic book centric and getting some popular comic book artists to help draw some pages. I know Babs Tarr and Robbie Rodriguez were linked to it.
I think Annie Wu was also.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's the next episode that's coming up. They're going to have it. They're going to be talking about one of the characters' backstories or something. It's going to be done partially in comic style or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never watched those, so I really don't. I know what it's about, but I don't know.
No idea.
Yeah. And actually, I think it's the dude, because what I'm reading here is the dude that was on Arrow as Walter Steele. So it's that dude, which, you know, sure.
All right.
Matt Landis, David, whoever that is, Usher Dirk Gently to television, try to honor Adam's legacy. So who is he? Matt Landis and Arvind Ethan David. Douglas Adams' Dirk Gently can't be stopped these days. The holistic detective who believes all things are connected starred in his first comic book miniseries from IDW Publishing last year and debuted his second, A Spoon Too Short, this week. Though it's still in the early stages, executive producers Matt Landis and Arvind Ethan David have risen to the occasion of expanding on the character Adams created in 1987's Dirk Gently's holistic detective agency. I know nothing about this, so. Matt Landis is a big name. We'll be talking about one of his comics out this week, later on in the show. Speaking of which, good time to do an ad break, and let me tell you about Amazon.com. Visit cspn.us, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps keep the Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today.
Nice.
Do Down to the comic book news of the week. This week we got the May 2016 solicits from all the major publishers. Lots of teases and reveals and creative team shakeups announced throughout. So go to your favorite comic book news website of choice to follow all that. Hasbro and Marvel are now making beautifully detailed but affordable role-play accessories.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. They announced this at Toy Fair 2016. The inaugural products are a pretty faithful replica of the movie Shield that Captain America wields, and and an Iron Man helmet with a detachable faceplate. Good luck, you know, putting my big noggin into the Iron Man helmet. But I'm definitely looking forward to the Captain America shield. Pre-order. It has been pre-ordered.
Where is Toy Fair held?
New York City. Oftentimes it is at the Javits Center, but I will find out for sure where this one was because it's not always there.
Okay.
And Age of 70, you can complete that Captain America cosplay that you've been working on. So.
Listen, just very quickly before we move on, this past year, New York Comic Con started cracking down on people carrying metal props into the con as part of their cosplay. So obviously you can't bring in like a metal spear or you can't bring in a metal spear or metal sword or anything bladed, but they also confiscated, you know, they kept it for you, they tagged it and kept it for you at the check-in. They confiscated all the expensive replica metal Captain America shields. And they were piled up. All the cosplay Captain Americas had to leave those $500, $600 replica shields out in the open, you know, obviously under the watch of security, but still, you know, I can't even imagine that. But what's cool about this Marvel Legends replica is that it's not metal. It has a metal finish, but it's not metal, so I think it's going to be the perfect thing for cosplayers to carry around and for me to, like, you know, keep in my office, you know, kind of bash people with it when I can.
Yeah, for anything toy-related, I have to pass over the mic to my cohorts because I don't keep up with that. So good to know. And hopefully we'll be covering it next year live.
That's the hope.
Let's see. So there's a whole bunch of announcements from the Comics Pro. Is that a retailer event, Comics Pro?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
So there's the Valiant announced or had a 10-page preview and anime trailer for ANA, The Adventures of Archer and Armstrong. And he checked that out. Jeff Johns' last issue of Justice League will be 50, so him and Jason Fabok will be finishing up Dark Side War. And then we got the whole announcement of what Rebirth is going to be. So it's not a reboot, it's more the lines of a relaunch with a whole bunch of new number ones and books going bi-monthly and some books disappearing and new books appearing. A lot to cover. Oh, and the $2.99 price point, which I love.
Yes.
I saw that and I was like, oh yeah.
Don't there call it a comeback?
32 ongoing series. 17 of them will be published twice a month.
Wow.
15 will be regular monthly titles. Plus they're doing a bunch of the Rebirth specials, but they will all be $2.99.
So wait, I thought most of the books were $2.99.
No. What they had been doing, a lot of the books that weren't as popular were $2.99 with, I think it was 22 pages or 24 pages, and then there were $3.99 books that were, I think, 32 pages. I'm not sure exactly, but there were some that were an extra dollar that had extra pages, and they were usually the Batmans and the Supermans and the Justice Leagues and all of that kind of stuff. But what they're saying now is that all of them are going to be at that $2.99 price point. But they haven't said what the page count is. But
yeah,
Marvel's also been lowering their page counts recently, and they've been at, I believe, at 22 pages for a while now at $3.99 as well. So even if they do 22 pages at $2.99, it's still a dollar cheaper for the same amount there, which is where they had been holding it for a while. So, but one of the big things that I'm actually, this is the dumbest thing to be excited for, but I'm excited for it, is that Action Comics and Detective are both going back to their original numbering. So Action Comics is going to go back to 957, Detectives is going to go back to 934, and then I believe both of those are the twice-a-month books. So they're going back to those big numbers, and they're just going to steamroll right through.
So when they hit 1,000, because that has never happened before, what's going to happen, or have they said yet?
They haven't said anything yet.
Okay.
Because that'll still be a while down the line.
Yeah, I was going to say, that'll be
2 years for Action and
2018.
Three for Detective.
They'll reboot it then. In the issue 1,000.
So I was pretty excited when all this started coming out. It was near the end of the day. I guess it was still like early West Coast time for the DC Comics people, but like I stayed at work like an extra hour, kind of like just reading over everything and getting my thoughts out. And I've actually jotted a bunch of notes down that I'll be doing a post on at some point tomorrow. Let's see. They before the Rebirth news came out, DC announced exclusive contracts for writer Tom King and artist Clay Mann and John Timms. So they'll be working exclusively on DC Comics and Vertigo imprint titles. Tom King currently writing Grayson, though that's going to be ending, and along with Omega Men, and writing Sheriff of Babylon for Vertigo.
Vision.
The Vision for Marvel, which he'll be ending that at issue 12, and I'd assume the book itself will probably end.
That was a planned ending for that one, though.
Yeah, I think they've already announced that.
He said, as John from John Suntress from the Word Balloon podcast tried to correct me today, he said on his podcast that Tom said that the Vision was ongoing. And I'm like, yeah, of course he said that because it is ongoing right now. But I wouldn't be surprised if it ends at 12 issues. And that's probably what it was planned for anyway.
Mm. Well, like his story was planned for 12. And it's one of those things where when he was done, they might have offered him another arc, or they may have, you know, gone to another writer or whatever. But now with him, you know,
going exclusive.
And I don't know what the sales are on Vision. I haven't looked at them recently, but I don't think they're that great.
Which is a shame.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's fantastic. But yeah,
and
Clay, he's also getting folded back into the Avengers. So
yeah, he's all new, all different Avengers.
Yeah,
Clay Mann is currently the artist on Poison Ivy Life. Was it Circle of Life and Death?
Cycle of Life.
I always get that.
Or Cycle of Death and Life, or I don't remember which one.
Life and Death. Yeah. He was just coming off of exclusive deal with Valiant, and John Timms is an artist on various Harley Quinn books. So congrats to them. Tom King will probably be writing some awesome DC books that I will be adding to my pull list in the future upcoming months.
Yeah.
Plus, we're also getting a new Blue Beetle series. Supergirl is returning, and there's also a Superwoman series that's been announced.
There's a Lex Luthor book. What was it? A lot of this is coming from Bleeding Cool because DC has it.
Superman?
Yeah, the Superman book. Super Dash Man.
Yeah.
Okay.
I see it. New number one issue. Yep, Super Dash Man.
There's Super Sons, which speculation says that has to do with the Lois and Clark book.
Right.
Black Canary, Birds of Prey book, Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, Teen
Trinity.
Titans.
Yeah.
And Titans, Trinity. A lot. There were more bi-monthly books than I originally thought there would be. I thought it would just be like the, you know, Actions and Batman's and Superman and Green Arrow, Flash or whatever. But it was a couple on there that surprised me. I think there was another one that I can't think of. Let me pull up my email.
Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns.
Give me a second and I'll pull
Cyborg
it up.
Cyborg is twice monthly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Deathstroke, Harley Quinn, Suicide Squad, those are all going twice monthly.
Yeah, stuff like that, does that really need to be bi-monthly? But
yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so.
They got to make that money.
I'm surprised Red Hood and the Outlaws is returning.
I don't know, look at the books we go.
No, Starfire.
No, that's
Red Hood Arsenal.
Red Hood Arsenal is not.
Oh. Yeah, Starfire lost her standalone book, so she may be coming back to the group.
Right.
Nightwing's returning. Green Lantern, the Green Lanterns, plural. And then Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps.
No Mr. Terrific, no Crypto.
Earth 2, Blue Beetle, Batman Beyond is returning. So So yeah, lots to look forward to. Oh, and Gotham Academy returning.
Yeah, they hadn't said, have they said anything about that Blue Beetle one? I'm not sure why I'm even curious about that one.
The other thing is all the creative teams will be announced at WonderCon May 25th, and it will be streamed live on DC Comics or DC Entertainment's YouTube channel. Mm. About damn time publishers started doing that. Give us the panels at these stupid cons for people that can't be there live.
Yeah.
They stream everything else. Get with the digital age.
May 25th. That's a Wednesday.
I think I said May 25th.
Yeah, well, it does say May 25th in this.
It does. Okay.
In this article, but that's a Wednesday. That's weird.
Maybe the con starts on. It's like New York Comic Con starting earlier in the year, early in the week.
Slow down. The CBR article says Saturday, March 26th.
This CBR mark. Oh wait, May 25th. Yes. May 25th is the launch. That's the launch of Rebirth. That's
right.
Okay, March 26th. I'm sorry.
There we go. Yeah, Saturday, March 26th. Book. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So yeah,
May is your kickoff. So there, it's a whole summer of the Rebirth.
Oh, and something else that they've learned is instead of doing all the new number ones in the same month, they've staggered into release.
Right.
Smart.
So yes, the DC Entertainment's YouTube channel will have it all. Have it all, and I'm sure probably the day before, a week before, Bleeding Cool will have the announcements plastered on their website. So if you're so inclined.
You know, 3 days before the book is supposed to come out, someone's going to take a picture of every single page and send it to Bleeding Cool. Someone's just going to sit there with their smartphone and just ka-chink and turn it, ka-chink, ka-chink, and turn it, ka-chink, ka-chink, send it to them.
Hey, it's too bad this YouTube thing is probably going to be early in the day. That would be a cool thing to kind of live stream and react.
Yeah, it would be. So I guess WonderCon works for them since it's in Los Angeles and they're in
LA. It won't be early in the day if it's in LA because it's 3 hours, 2 hours for Dirt maybe, but 3 hours for us.
Yeah.
So yeah, more to come with that. That's all that. Oh, and of course, Bleeding Cool already has an unconfirmed report that Sam Humphries is signing an exclusive with DC, which is odd because it seems like he just signed his Marvel exclusive not too long ago.
Yeah.
Dark Horse announces 30th anniversary promotion in June with the Dark Horse Day sampler. It will include an Alien vs. Predator Blood Time, Sin City, Daddy's Little Girl, The Umbrella Academy, Anywhere But Here, and more. Cullen Bunn takes on Conan the Slayer, and Joel Elad to be IDW's Comic Store Whisperer announced at Comics Pro. So, in other words, he's going to be their new direct market sales manager. All right. And the last read of the night, let's go with Skull Candy. As soon as it comes up here. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. Now, for listeners of Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner and then shop for high quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy audio through cspn.us. Do it today. As we get ready to review some books.
Aw, do we have to?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
All right. Let's see what you guys read.
Power Man and Iron Fist number 1 is a great book. It's my click of the week, and you should all read it.
Wow, that was quick.
Y'all read a lot more than I did.
That was quick. Roger's just like, hey, that's my click of the week. It's right there.
Pow.
I'm still debating that in another book this week, but I'll also chime in. Power Man, I like the production design on Power Man and Iron Fist, or like the old school retro feel of they call that the intro page, or the where you have the creators and the editors' names.
Mm-hmm.
I like that setup. The lettering by Clayton Cowles was mm-hmm. nice. I like just the fun feel of the book,
yes,
kind of lighthearted, with some back and forth banter between Cage and Rand, along with the fighting and action, just all over good stuff.
The one thing that bothered me was the dialogue, because they just kept repeating themselves over and over again, and that kind of, I got tired of that after a while.
I kind of enjoyed that part just a little bit, because I figured, but I'm hoping it's not something they're going to keep doing, but I think they were just kind of... you know, setting the tone with that some kind of way.
It's funny
because they're supposed to be so close, so you would expect something like that to happen.
Right. What I was going to say is, well, the first thing I wanted to mention is that this was one of the two hip-hop covers that dropped this week. This is the hip-hop cover for this book. I'm showing it to the camera. I don't know, Dirt, if you read the Power Man and Iron Fist book back in, like, the 80s?
Nope.
So I did, and, you know, I remember liking it a lot, and this is a very, this strikes a very similar tone to that, to their interpersonal dynamic, their really family dynamic from that series. So it was a great kind of reinvention of that. And so I think that's what they're trying to evoke. So, you know, maybe if you look at it from that point of view, you understand that, okay, that's why they're repeating each other, you know, what they say. So
I mean, yeah, you know that there's a family theme going on here because they say the word family 11 billion times.
Yeah, exactly. It comes back to bite them too, which I thought was the best part of the story.
Yeah.
You know,
Right.
That twist at the end was welcome. I honestly could not remember. The point of the story is, you know, they're on what they think is, you know, a simple mission of, I don't want to say mercy, but a recovery mission. And things go awry because they haven't been exactly told the complete truth. Mm-hmm. And the person who feeds them this half/untruth is a character from their past when they were operating as heroes for hire. And, you know, I don't particularly recall this character, but, you know, it's not important that you know who she is. They establish, you know, what her relationship with these two characters are, and you move forward from there. So, you know, I thought it was a pretty effective first issue. Shout out to Sanford Green, previous guest on the Comic Book Chronicles, who is the artist on the book. You know, I thought it was a well put together book. I understand Dirt's criticism, but at the same time, I just sort of let it slide because ultimately, like I said, it was, you know, really meant to evoke you know, a little bit of nostalgia and help create the atmosphere for the ongoing, which is, you know, they're sort of going back and forth at each other.
It's not like it made me hate the book or anything. It's not like I'm like ripping it into shreds. I'm never reading this garbage again or anything like that, you know. But it was just kind of one of those things where by the time I got to like page 18 or 20, I didn't want to hear the word family anymore. You know,
yeah.
I don't know. It was just one of those things where things just, like, they just kept repeating the same little bits, like, mm-hmm. over and over. And I understand the, you know, the trying to reassure each other that, you know, it's like, oh, and you guys are getting back together. No, we're not getting back together. But we're getting back together, but they're not getting back together. You're going to get back together with him. No, we're not getting back together. It's just like on and on again and again and again. And it's like, I understand the humor in that, but after a while, it was just kind of like, all right, let's move on. You know, it's like that punchline that you hit that I do way too many times over and over in the same podcast, you know.
Sure.
I do it to be annoying, though.
You know? Yes, well, we tolerate that too, Dirt.
Also,
because you're family, yes.
That's right.
Also, I just got notification that Diamond sent out emails to all the stores that are going to be affected by that truck collision. Mm-hmm. There are about 100 stores that are going to have their shipments you know, messed up because of that. Yeah. Apparently, we have not gotten the email. So as of right now, as far as we know, our store is safe.
And I think we never actually talked about that when we started recording, so I think we need to fill people in on what truck.
Oh, we didn't cover that in the news part?
Yeah, it was in there. Well, we didn't talk about it, but it was in there.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Okay, so basically a large tractor trailer was involved in an accident, and as they're showing it on the news, people begin to realize that there are a whole bunch of Diamond comic boxes as part of this wreck. I'm trying to pull up here we go. Here's the news story. And they got a close-up of all these Deadpool books laying in the road. What is this? Deadpool institutionalized trades. Like all these trades are laying out across the road. But you can see in these pictures all this massive damaged boxes just, you know, scattered across the road, and just everything just damaged. You look at the photos and there's just little bits of paper all over the highway for miles and miles and miles. So I'm not sure where I-71 is, but Diamond sent out an email saying that Diamond product from the Plattsburgh Distribution Center to the Olive Branch Distribution Center was involved in the serious accident. It's for product on sale February 24th. Affected customers have been notified of the delay via a separate email. If you have not received the email, your shipment should arrive as scheduled. So for right now, we have not gotten the separate email, so it looks like we're okay.
And the driver was unhurt.
Well, yeah, whatever about the driver, but let's talk about the comics.
Oh, God.
So, anyway.
So.
Oh, well, before we go any further, let me go back to the Power Man Iron Fist thing. Sanford Green also did another variant, which I'm showing up on the screen right now. It's a Black Panther variant for the 50th anniversary. I could not find it, but I am on the hunt for it.
My store didn't have that one. He had a whole bunch of others, so.
Yeah.
What's the distribution on that, do you know?
Yeah,
is that a 1-in-100 or something?
Yeah, that I do not know, unfortunately.
Now let me see if I can find it real quick.
While Doug looks for that, what else do we want to talk about this week? How was Star Wars 16?
It was good. They're starting a new arc. This takes place after Vader died, of course. They captured Dr. Aphra. They are transporting her on, apparently, Sana Star Wars' ship to this jail that's right next to a sun.
Right, and that's where the story lost. I hate to say this.
Really?
You know, my notes basically were you know, like four words, which is a Rebel Alliance prison. Maybe that's, it is a war after all. Everyone's got to be able to hold their prisoners of war somehow. I just, you know, like the story just sort of lost me right there. You know, a Rebel Alliance prison, you know, ? So, but go on, Roddy. That's pretty much where I kind of, my opinion on this kind of diverges from yours.
Right. Well, you know what? That does bring up a point, because the part of that was kind of weird for me was that Leia was all right with it, or seemingly all right. She was like, yeah, just like this is where we're taking her. But at the same time, you would expect both sides to have some sort of high security, you know, prison or something.
I mean, are they going to put a bullet in everybody's head?
Yeah, apparently won't. Yeah. So you would figure the rebellion would have something like this as opposed to, like outright killing people or, you know.
Yeah. Basically, prison camp or prison, yeah.
Yeah. So that being said, they are en route. Aphra has been apparently trying to get away like two or three different times, as they showed during the course of the beginning of the issue. They finally get to the prison where they take her, and at the same time, there is also the bounty hunter group from Vader sent also coming to try to infiltrate prison to extract her, maybe, possibly. But we also find out in this book that Aphra and Sana Staros have a history with each other because they end up having a conversation, you know, while Aphra's locked up, you know, and the most of the book was pretty much, you know, Sana talking about, hey, you paid me, that's why I'm here, and, you know, talking to Leia and whatnot, until things just start going off at the end of the book. I mean, at the end of that part of the book, rather.
Are they going to do a Thelma and Louise-style spinoff book with Aphra and Sana Solo?
Heck, I was thinking it seemed like they're setting up to be, this is going to be Leia and Staros, I mean, Sana. But it seemed like that's where this arc is going to be, or at least the first couple of them, because obviously they're going to be the ones fighting, you know, this infiltration group.
Well, but Leia's got to get back into the regular, you know, storyline at some point, but they can take those two characters that no one's ever heard of before and just have them run wild in the galaxy.
True. But Aphra's kind of tied into Vader, which that would mean that would put Sana in that tie also.
Yeah, but she didn't want to be. I mean, she's working with Vader under the threat of death, so.
True.
Yeah. You know.
But she still also seems like she idolized. Look, even, well, actually, she's name dropping Vader throughout the course of the time she's talking.
She's just so good at being so bad.
Yeah. What are you gonna do? Yeah. I got her. She's a good character. She's funny. But
anyway, sorry. Back to your review. I didn't mean to.
No, you're good. You're good, because that was a good point to bring up. But at the end of that, we also cut to Luke and Han, who I guess are supposedly are trying to get some supplies for the rebellion. And, of course, Han is playing Sabacc and fails miserably, and they lose all the money.
Well, he wasn't failing miserably. He was actually doing well. And
well, you're right. You're right.
Got caught cheating.
Got cocky.
Yeah.
Well, that would be failing miserably, but yeah. Which you kind of saw coming, because obviously we know the character well enough. So, like, yeah, his luck wasn't going to hold out.
Right. So,
and then they get chased out of the place, and now they got to find a way to get the supplies they need. So there's that.
All right. Who wants to go next?
Real quick, let me switch over, if it'll let me. Okay, it won't let me right now. But regardless, I found the listing for the Black Panther 50th anniversary variant. It is a 1 in 25. So the store had to order 25 copies of Power Man and Iron Fist 1 in order to get that variant. So it's out there.
But probably didn't.
So you're going to have to dig around, and you're going to have to pay a premium for that one.
Mm.
Okay, so anyway.
I think I know a store that might have it around here.
Second and Charles.
Nope, I tried there.
Oh, okay.
At 70, you can probably find one at Midtown.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
But we'll see.
That's what PayPal's for.
That's right.
I'm still debating ordering some of the hip-hop variants from Midtown's website.
But so what are you missing? I thought you got most of everything.
I'm missing the Thor and a couple others. Really? Yeah, I thought I had that one, but I don't.
Gotcha.
I need to see if they're still like 15% off on the website. They're probably not.
I just saw an ad in one of the books, so maybe that's the case.
All right. Let's see. Avengers Standoff, Welcome to Pleasant Hill.
Speaking of hip-hop covers, there was a hip-hop cover to that also this week by Andrew Robinson of the Fifth Beatle fame.
Yep, Stank on Ya.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Although I bought the Scotty Young variant.
Which was a nice variant. I don't blame you for that one.
Mm-hmm. But
Sorry.
I was just gonna say my son wanted to read it, so I ended up buying the Scotty Young and giving it to him. So
yeah, I was about to say the Scotty Young variant for Power Man Iron Fist was actually pretty good too.
Yeah, I saw that one.
That one.
So Avengers Standoff, it was fine, but I didn't feel like really a whole lot happened for this being the kickoff of this big event. Like you got the background on what's going on, and you got the big reveal at the end, but it almost felt like that could have been the first
10 pages.
15 pages, yeah. And then you could have had some actual story continuing on, and we just didn't get that.
Right. And
we have an appearance by Winter Soldier, Bucky Barnes.
That makes no sense.
Well, my impression is he's going to get pulled into the storyline, and it's going to come down to S.H.I.E.L.D. versus the Avengers, and then that way they can mirror Captain America Civil War, the movie, in the ongoing Avengers comics, so that you do have some sort of connection between what's going on in the comics and what happens in the movie.
Or maybe this might tie into Thunderbolts at some point.
Well, yeah, that's obvious. But in terms of what Dirt is saying, kind of trying to parallel what's happening in the movies to try to recreate something that appears to have the same kind of ideological differences.
Because Civil War, the movies, has nothing to do with Civil War, the comic.
So we know, Dirt, we know.
I don't know if I've mentioned that before.
maybe.
Handful of times.
Overall, I thought the story in general was okay. The artwork was nice. You do have this mystery going on. This little town, people who go here have memory problems, and they run into all sorts of issues that they never end up leaving the town, so they're just kind of there forever. And you're following this character who can't remember what happened to him or why he's there, but there's this strange child that's never supposed to be alone, that no one's supposed to talk to. And then at the end, we get a big reveal, which I won't spoil, but you find out what this town is. Oh, you want me to spoil it?
Yeah.
Okay. So
I already halfway spoiled it, too. So
this town is actually a S.H.I.E.L.D. prison, and they're putting villains here in order to delude them into thinking that they're regular people living in a small town, and then they won't do bad things anymore to good people, is basically the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually, I like the idea.
Exactly.
Makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm guessing that the whole Bucky Barnes thing is so that S.H.I.E.L.D. ends up sending him off to this little town so that he gets locked up. And I'm assuming there are going to be a lot of people upset that Bucky is caught in this place. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing where the story's going.
Yeah, but, which would like explain why Steve Rogers ends up being a factor.
Right. So I thought the premise was fine, but it just took too long to get where it was going, and I didn't feel like there was any major, like, this felt more like the free comic book day thing that they give away to set up the story, or this is like the 16-page free thing that they hand out at conventions over the summer to kick off a story, as opposed to being a thing that you're going to pay $5 for to set up the story to just get a lot of, like, I get it, it's a small town. I understand, nobody has memories, there's something else going on here, let's get to it, and they don't get to it until, like, the last two pages of the book. So
I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. I thought it would be just like your typical, even though it's not a zero issue, that's what I went into it considering it would be. And I thought they gave a lot away as far as, you know, revelation of the town being the prison, the reveal of the villain at the end of the last page. So I was pleased with the overall product.
When I read this, the only thing I could think of was G.I. Joe's Springfield.
Yes!
Secret Headquarters.
Yes, like, good job, Dirk.
And I just kept thinking all they had to do was have, like, 5 pages of this guy being confused and someone coming up to him and saying, hey, didn't you ever watch G.I. Joe? This is just
like Springfield. You remember and then, Shipwreck? And,
That's all they had to do. People melted in the car wash. And,
So that's great. I find myself agreeing with Tim's point that it was a surprisingly good start to this event. You know, we've had some events that, you know, especially the ones that aren't like the universe changing events that kind of fell flat in their execution at the beginning. I thought that this issue was fairly well executed so that it told us what the story was. It does, in fact, accelerate the revelation of what the true nature of Pleasant Hill is. So, you know, we do get that in the first issue. We do get the reintroduction of these characters that have been away for a while. You know, their return to the Marvel Universe has obviously been foreshadowed in solicits and announcements, but this is the first time I think these characters have seen the light of day in a Marvel comic in a long time. So, you know, I thought this was a fairly well executed start to an event. So, that with that point, I definitely agree.
Well, I can tell you, all the people in this small town, they're like a family. Okay.
Let's see how long he keeps up with this.
Oh, it's on now.
Oh, cue up. Who sings that? Is it Sly and the Family Stone?
It's the family right there.
Family. Yeah. We are family. No, that's we are family. Who is that?
Pointer Sisters.
The Pointer Sisters.
Yeah. You saying if you're thinking Sly and the Family Stone, that's not that song.
Who sings that? Sister Sledge. We're Sister all Sledge. Wrong, damn it.
Okay. Well, there was Sister in the dang gone name.
All right. That's fun.
Okay.
What we got?
You want to get some DC out the way?
I didn't read any DC, so you guys take that.
Superman, American Alien number 4. I see a couple of people read that.
Yeah.
So far, the only issue out of this I haven't enjoyed was the second issue, I think it was. But this, I like how this was full of guest stars, because we had Oliver Queen, Lex Luthor, Lois Lane, Dick Grayson as a kid, and Batman. Not Bruce Wayne, but Batman. And there was sort of seeds were planted that all, however many of them I just named, all might play a part in helping lead Clark to becoming Superman. At least that's what I took away from it. Like, from each conversation he had with a person, it seemed clues were being laid for him, for Clark's journey to becoming Superman. Even at the end when he had Batman's cape and cowl, and how when he held it with the sun reflecting the shadow, made it look like it was a cape on his back. I think that was on the final page.
Yeah.
Jay Lee's art was fine. I like you're used to the non backgrounds in his work, so I guess I've seen his work before, so I was used to that. And I guess I had forgotten how he makes everyone look Asian.
Oh no.
No shots fired. But yeah, everyone's got the squinty eyes and the facial features of an Asian person, male, female, depending. I liked his Lex Luthor, the whole dialogue between Lex and Clark in the elevator, and like Lex just going off into, here's my evil, narcissistic monologue for your... For this unknown reporter was like pure Lex.
And then he drops him off at the LexCorp daycare, which I thought was a nice touch.
Yeah,
there at the end. But I like part of me. I'm a little conflicted on the series because I understand that this is not necessarily supposed to be continuity. This is Max Landis's story, and so the way he tells it doesn't have to be, you know, what is the actual background of the New 52 universe or the, you know, post-convergence universe or whatever the heck we're in right now. But It seems like there's a fair amount of retcons that he throws in here with him meeting all these different characters and the interactions that they have. Like Oliver Queen comes across completely different than he did in where it would be in the New 52 at this point, because he should be younger and much more full of himself and the playboy and, you know, whatever. But having said that, I really like the way the story is structured. I like the way he uses the characters. I like how he's even building on his own series here. So it seems like it's these snippets of disconnected moments in Clark's life, but you actually do see how they're connected and how they weave together. So I like the series overall, but I'm not sure how much of this we're supposed to take as actual canon as to being part of Superman's origin, New 52 or not. It just seems like he's throwing a bunch of stuff out there that are really neat concepts and really cool ideas, but I just don't know how serious we're supposed to, you know, take a lot of it.
Yeah, if I was a longtime Superman fan that knew, like, all his history and whatnot, I might have different feelings about it, but since I don't care about Superman and I don't know his back history all that well, it works fine for me. Like, I don't know if he's changing things or not, because I don't know.
You know, Superman can hear you say that. He's got super hearing.
Fine, who cares?
Oh, no!
Oh, man.
Actually, I guess technically in Action Comics, Superman, he doesn't have all his powers back just yet.
Yeah, but in this series, he does, so.
But this is in the past, so unless he can hear things in the future, I'm fine. Yeah, but
Superman can also time travel. Don't you remember when he flew around the Earth backwards?
Oh, no.
remember, I always read that stuff back then, so I don't know about that.
Oh, that was the movie.
That was the movie. Yeah.
No, oh, we're going way back in the archives now.
I definitely didn't watch that.
That's funny.
But yeah,
I think this is one of those cool things. Once it's in a trade, if you've got somebody who's, you know, you always have one of those friends who's like, oh, I read comics, you know, a long time ago, but I haven't read anything in years. Well, this is one of those things where, you know, well, hey, if you like Superman, go ahead and read this, you know, series. It's, you know, it's like I said, it's got a lot of neat concepts. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on here, but it's just not I don't think it's a book that really, you know, you have to read. It's like essential reading for the character and for continuity.
It is odd that it's ending. It's a 7-issue mini, I believe. I'm just used to everything being an even number.
Yeah, it's kind of an oddly numbered story. I think the closest I've ever seen is an 8-issue limited series, and that's very rare.
But yeah, I'm enjoying the series so far.
I stopped reading it, sorry.
Okay.
I wasn't a huge fan of issue 2, but I liked 3 a lot more, and I liked 4 a lot. So.
Yeah, I think 2 was the one with the kid and someone getting shot, right? Or Superman, like...
I thought 2 was the one on the boat.
No, that was the previous issue. That was
that was the previous issue.
Oh, okay.
I enjoyed that one the most. And I just found out that the woman that Clark spent the whole issue talking with was the villain Cheetah.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Well, see, there you go. Again, it's a neat concept that throws in there, especially because of the relationship he has with Wonder Woman later on, you know. Mm-hmm. But, again, I don't know that that's necessarily going to stick with continuity. So, anyway,
yeah.
Still a fun read.
Yes.
Well, if we're talking about DC, then I did read Sinestro. I actually went back to issue 16, where the current storyline starts, a Guardian has actually harnessed the black energy, so he's become a force of death, and he's part of this group, the Pale. And they are bringing, you know, death and destruction across the universe. And they, of course, come to attack Earth because that's what everybody does when they want to conquer the universe. And Sinestro, as part of the new realignment of the cores, Earth is under the Yellow Lantern's protection now instead of Green Lantern protection. So he actually has to build a Yellow Lantern army in order to protect Earth. And as part of this arc, he sent rings to Earth and Deathstroke, Harley Quinn, Superman, Wonder Woman, Scarecrow, they've all become Yellow Lanterns, or Yellow Lanterns again, because some of them were before in the War of Light storyline, and they're all fighting in order to protect Earth. Sinestro, we find, has rebuilt the Manhunter robots, if you remember that storyline from... I think it was Millennium, is where the Manhunters became a big deal again in the DC universe. He's rebuilt them to work for the Sinestro Corps, and basically it comes down to this issue 20 here is this final battle between Sinestro and that Guardian of the Universe. And they basically throw it all on the line, and he uses all the Yellow Lantern power that he can in order to defeat this guy, and it looks like Sinestro has basically put himself right at death's door, and he's handing the Yellow Lantern core over to his daughter, and his daughter is a former Green Lantern,
right.
Who she left the green and went back to the yellow to be with her father, and now it looks like she's going to be the new head of the Yellow Lanterns, which the book is called Sinestro. It's not called Sinestro's Daughter, so I'm not sure, you know, how much of this is going to stick again in the long run, but it's still a fun series. These last few issues have actually been really entertaining. I had to go back and, like I said, back to number 16 where this arc really takes off. But it's been a good run. It's been very entertaining. I've enjoyed it. So this Sinestro is actually a pretty good one.
Cool.
And this is Cullen Bunn. So
the man that writes everything.
Mm. Yeah. Do you have any other DC?
Oh yeah, there's Poison Ivy.
Okay, how was that? The follow up to the the first issue of that limited series.
Yeah, I mean it's good. They talked about the artist man is being getting the exclusive contract for DC. The artwork is good. The storyline basically, Ivy is trying to, I guess you could say, go straight in a sense. She's no longer trying to rob banks or whatever, but she's doing genetic research. She knows all this stuff about plants, and she's working with these other scientists trying to crossbreed animal and plant DNA together in order to, you know, create new whatevers. And we find out that her hidden agenda is she's actually trying to procreate. She's trying to create children using the DNA and splicing it in with the plants. But at the same time, this lab where she works, someone has broken in, murdered one of the scientists, and so the police are here. They're investigating. Whoever's in charge of the lab is lying to the police about certain things. We don't know why. Another character, it looks like, is either murdered or seriously injured in this issue. Someone who you think might be part of the cover-up for the crime that happened before, he's the one that gets hurt. So now it looks like it's someone else that could be involved. So you've got this mystery going on in the background. So this idea of her, you know, trying to go clean and trying to have children and whatever is just there for her character development, but the actual story is this murder mystery that's going on at the lab where she's working. So there's some fun stuff going on here. There's a balance between the plot and the subplot. It's actually been a lot better than I expected. Like I said, when the first issue came out, I had absolutely no plans to read it, but for whatever reason, I think because the artwork was good enough, I decided to pick it up and flip through it and actually enjoyed it. And yeah, so it's an intriguing story, and I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. DC. No one else read any DC at all?
Nope.
No.
All right. Well, then my last one is Martian Manhunter. Then is my last DC. And when we last left Martian Manhunter, there was a giant evil robot and the giant good robot getting ready to attack Power Ranger style. And Martian Manhunter realizes that he can, because he can shape change.
Form of a giant robot!
He can interface with one of the robots, so he takes it over. So you basically have, the story was all about Martian Manhunter being some sort of weapon, and he's been split into all these personalities. And so he's a female, he's an old man, he's a weird-looking monster, he's an FBI agent, he's a little kid, like all these different parts of Martian Manhunter. Well, now part of Martian Manhunter is a giant freaking robot that's on Mars, and looks like John Constantine is going to get roped into the story here, because people who are of a magical bent can see that Mars is being brought back to life, but it's being brought back to life in place of Earth, and it's going to destroy Earth in order for Mars to come back and all the people to survive. And so now he's trying to find a way to take all the people on this planet, on this rebirthed Mars, find a way to get them off of the planet, get them onto Earth where they're going to be safe, and then blow up this Mars so that Earth is not destroyed. And again, it's just a weird, crazy, ridiculous, fantastic story. It's one of those things where, you know, I'm trying to describe these giant robots and Martian Manhunter becoming one, and it just sounds ridiculous and stupid, but if you actually read it, it's just one of those, a child in a toy box with his toys coming up with this fantastic story. It actually plays out really well in the book. This is one of those sleeper hit series, kind of like the way, you know, nobody expected anything out of Vision, and that's been great. Martian Manhunter has just been bizarre and weird and fantastic, and you know, it's another great series.
I do have one question. I'm behind on Martian Manhunter. I need to read issue 8 before I get to 9. But I see about 10 different names listed on the cover, so I'm assuming multiple artists?
Pencilers and inkers, maybe a couple different colorists. I'm not sure. But when I read it, nothing stood out. As I was reading it, nothing stood out like, oh my gosh, the art suddenly shifted. But if I go back and look for changes, I can see, okay, well, this page was done by someone different than this page. But as you're reading it, if you're not thinking about the fact that it changes, you don't notice any major shifts while you're going through it.
Okay. I see Silver on there, so I'm hoping that's RB Silver, so I like his art. So I will be hopefully catching up this weekend.
All right, well, that's it for DC.
I won't clap. Well, hey. All right, moving on.
Let's hear about Huck, Agent 70.
Anyone else read it?
No.
I'm an issue behind, so.
Yeah, same here.
You didn't read it, Turt?
No.
Okay.
I have no idea what this is about.
Well, a quick recap. We have, let's just say, a kind of simple man who has superpowers, and a town, you know, this is a quick recap of the first four issues. A town basically kept him a secret because, you know, he's just kind of a, you know, a very simple, innocent, you know, guy, kind of boyish and kind of kept sheltered under the guise of just being a very simple guy. He's basically outed, and you know, certain people want to take advantage of him. But what we found out in the last issue is that he had a relation. He had family, and family had sought him out. And now this family is taking him to go visit their mother. And, you know, this issue is about their travels to meet their mother, but there is a twist at the end, and all is not as it seems. So I'm enjoying this. I think this issue had a lot more happening in it than maybe some of the in-between issues. I think the first issue was very strong. I think the second issue was okay, and the third issue was okay until we get to the introduction of the possible family relation. You know, at the end of issue 3. So this issue, again, starts to basically ramp up the action and a lot of the story progression. So this is probably the best issue since the first issue of the series. I've done my best to not spoil too much of what happens. So, you know, I do recommend this. I think Millar's got a very good feel of, you know, kind of like he almost kind of has trying to recapture maybe a little bit of the innocence of superhero storytelling in this, as opposed to some of the other Millar World stuff.
What was that? So not a lot of swearing, not a lot of murders, not a lot of...
Yeah, not so much.
Okay.
Give it a shot. But like I said, this is the issue that where the story really picks up and moves along.
Cool. And he's actually kind of laid off the swearing in a lot of his recent Image work.
Oh, fiddle faddle.
You don't want to swear around family.
Oh, boy.
What did I read?
Come on, who read Mighty Thor number 4?
I did.
Anybody else?
I skimmed the first couple of pages, and I need to catch up on this book.
All right. Well, so without spoiling too much, because Roddy just skimmed it, basically we have you know, the next chapter in the war that Malekith is waging against the elf realms, and you know, Thor's trying to stop all the bloodshed, and there's definitely some scheming. Backroom deals being made to kind of move the story along. There's a lot of really great developments in this. I don't want to spoil too much. This is a candidate for Click of the Week for me because of so much of the, you know, this is another kind of like a moving day type issue, the same way Huck number 4 was. This issue really does move the story along, you know, in leaps and bounds. You know, when I say moving day, I'm reminded of it's something that you hear in like golf tournaments where you know, people move up the leaderboard and people miss the cut, and this is where, you know, things are happening. This is an issue where the story is moving along, so that's what makes me think of it as a moving day.
And I'm just looking forward to next issue with the throwdown between Odin and Thor.
Yep.
So. I also want to praise Matt Wilson's color work on this and Russell Dauterman, the artist, because there's some beautiful panels, panels, and just the views of like Thor falling or Jane Foster falling or looking up at frost giants.
And a lot of the facial expressions, too.
Even the political intrigue with the trial of Freya and Loki being the comedy relief. Hi, Daddy.
Yes. Hi, what is it? Hi, what does he say to Odin?
Other Daddy. Daddy. Fun stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I really like this issue. It is a candidate for Click of the Week for me.
Spider-Woman number 4. Potential Click of the Week for me.
Yeah, same here. I agree with you.
Yeah, if I had not picked the other book, this would have been...
I'm still deciding, but for this, Jessica Drew has her baby while kicking Skrull ass.
Way much.
Yeah.
That's what she does.
Especially pages 17 and 18, which were pretty nicely laid out, at least page 17 anyway. But, yeah, definitely.
Javier Fernandez is doing some great work as far... Rodriguez Fernandez, I think, is another artist. Javier Rodriguez doing great panel layouts. I even like how in one panel he can have the people move from be in three different positions in the same room or the same space, and it doesn't feel awkward.
Yeah, and the dialogue was also great in the book. I mean,
It was Nick Spencer, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I give listen.
Oh no, Dennis Hopeless.
Dennis Hopeless. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
Apologies.
Yeah.
Hopeless has me excited to read this. That says a lot.
You know? Same here.
Like he has me excited to read this. I'm definitely giving some thought to putting this on my pull list. Mm. So, you know, because I'm actually intrigued as to, you know, what is next for Jessica Drew and the baby. And if you read it's not the letters page, it's the afterword. I don't know if you had a chance to read that yet, but if you take a look at what should be the letters page, but are actually notes from the creators and the editor, if you read that, it's actually a really good. It provides a lot of insight into the first four issues of this series, and it's pretty informative and enlightening to the extent that you see some of the things they may have drawn on, some of their personal experiences that they may have drawn on in creating this book. So, to echo Tim's sentiment, this is a definite candidate for Click of the Week for me.
Yeah, this was a really good read. I mean, the last three issues also were actually pretty good reads also. Except we had the quote unquote Die Hard episode last
issue. Yeah, the last issue was the Die Hard issue. Yes, if I'm not mistaken, I did make that a Click of the Week for me. So this is a great follow up to that.
So yeah, good stuff. Good
I enough. Like that.
Go ahead.
I like that they got the baby birth out of the way so early.
Yeah.
Wasn't stretched out to like 12 issues.
Mm-hmm.
But now all we need to do is find out whose it is, unless you go by that one page, which was kind of had a funny joke on it.
I don't even remember it.
It was a conversation between. Yeah.
Yeah.
Much like this is the prevailing internet theory.
All right. Anything else anyone wants to touch on?
Dirt, you read Web Warriors number 4?
I did.
What'd you think?
I enjoyed it.
Yes. isn't it just a fun read? Isn't it crazy how it's just like this offbeat kind of fun action-packed series?
Well, the book started with this group of spiders, spider-men and women and girls and hams, and then we got electros.
Yes.
So now there's an army of electros that we found, and then it turns out that the electros were holding captive an army of Doc Ocks. And so now we've got the spiders, the electros, and the Doc Ocks.
Oh my!
All pulled from these different universes. I just love the way that they explore each character.
Mm-hmm.
You get the Doc Ocks, and most of them are evil, but you can see there's at least one, but it looks like there's a couple that are more friendly and less terrible than what we've come to know. And the way it plays off, the spiders rescue the ox from the electros, but the Doc Ox, being who they are, decide that they're not happy about being free. They just want to kill the spiders because that's what Doc Ox do.
Right.
So it's just that fun, taking the Spider-Man history and they play with it, but there are still those, themes that run through.
Right.
No matter what.
Right. The scene that you're referencing, I'm actually looking at it right now on my tablet. Spider-Gwen is doing her best William Wallace from Braveheart.
Oh, and, yeah, give it a
and, And basically she ends it in William Wallace style, freedom! And the Ben Parker Spider-Man in this is like, what are you doing? And Spider-Gwen says, I'm giving an awesome freedom speech. And the Ox are like, a Spider-Man, a Spider-Woman, kill them! So it was just great, great fun. In terms of the overall development of the story, it's still moving along at a pretty brisk pace.
There's enough going on where they started with this premise of them having their own little pocket universe where they have this web that they use to read what's happening, across the universe, whatever. And by issue 4, all of that has been upended.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that they established in the first issue is pretty much out the window, other than the fact that these are, spiders from different dimensions working together. That's still about the only thing that's constant from that first issue. So there's enough going on, enough developments and changes that it's interesting. It's not, I was afraid by this point we'd have the fourth story of, okay, there's an Electro that's gone bad on the world, we've got to go stop him. But that's all we were going to get, and we're getting actually a lot more than that. It's actually very satisfying to read this.
Yeah, this is another candidate for Click of the Week for me because I have so much fun reading this, and it's just one of those unexpected fun reads that have come out of the Secret Wars relaunch. So, kudos to the creative team for putting, this storyline together.
Mm-hmm. When they get to the Kraven the Hunters, let me know.
Listen, Roddy, there's a lot of great stuff in here. And again, shout out to Mike Costa and David Baldi on the writer and penciler, respectively, and Walden Wong, the inker. There's a host of colors here. I'm not going to name them all, but it's such a great read. I wish more people were reading this. I don't know if this is selling well in most stores, but this is so, so fun that if I wanted to just hand someone a book with like kind of classic superhero fare, this might be it.
And what's also great is how well the spiders work together as a family.
Goodness. Well, there's a great exchange here between Spider-Man Noir and Spider-Ham. Spider-Ham says, the exchange goes like this. Don't listen to him. He's not even a real pig. Spider-Ham says, I'm a cartoon. Are you saying I'm not real? Because that's racist. Spider-Man Noir comes back and says, I'm not having this fight with you again, little orphan hammy. Oh my God! It's so well done.
Like it's such an absurd premise, and it plays off that absurdity so well.
Yeah,
I think in the same way, Martian Manhunter takes it much in a more serious route, but at the same time, it's taking that ridiculous premise and making it work. Mm-hmm. And this takes that ridiculous premise and makes it work, but it makes it work with a lot of humor and action and fun.
Yeah. Yeah, this book is a lot of fun. If you guys aren't reading this, listeners and viewers, if you're not reading this, try to pick this up because the book, I believe, needs support. It's just a lot of fun to read.
Anecdotally, in our store, it sells pretty well, but that's because usually the Amazing Spider-Man people and Spider-Gwen people pick it up because it ties in as far as that goes. But industry-wide, I'm not sure how well it's doing.
They're not picking up Spider-Woman, keeping the family together?
Not as much, no.
I think Spider-Woman's not as connected. I know that they've tried to create or reinforce the connection with Spider-Gwen crossing over that one issue, but Spider-Woman is so connected to Captain Marvel right now.
Yeah. It feels more like an Avengers tie-in book than a Spider-Man tie-in book.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Although they are doing that Spider-Woman mini at some point soon.
It's an event, right? The Spider-Woman event?
I believe it is, yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, are we ready for a quick?
Yes.
Rapid, yeah. Let's go rapid fire.
Yeah, I got one real quick. Civil Server number 2, and that'll be it for me. Here we have Surfer and Dawn back on Earth. The Surfer's getting kind of bored of being there, as he is wont to do. Dawn takes him around to some of her old favorite places, and he starts to feel a little bit better about it. And then something happens that shudders back to last issue, where a group called the Hordrix, I can't remember what they're called, had an item that was of Zenlavian origin, which in this issue, Surfer finally realizes that because a very big one ends up coming into Earth's atmosphere. It was almost like a Galactus-like thing, whereas you see this big green orb and they're coming down like this one person is Galactus, and he has a herald who he acquired last who we conveniently acquired last issue of one Ben Grimm, and they've come to Earth to kind of to, as they say, bless the Earth with all of the goodness of Xin-La and basically changing the Earth into another Xin-La. In the midst of this, the Surfer and Dawn are basically see this and recognizes what this is. They go to try to find the help, which the first people he goes to is the Fantastic Four, which are no longer the Fantastic Four. He finds out that you know, Parker Industries owns the building, and they're basically catching up with Secret Wars at this point. But they do end up coming across Alicia Masters, which ends up being a slight issue for Dawn, because she finds out that that she was not the first Earth girl that has been traveling with Silver Surfer. Which also plays into, and then they, you know, talk for a little bit, and Alicia apparently has all these ties to all the superheroes, quite naturally, because she's done, you know, figures of them. So, oh, and Surfer also goes to Avengers Mansion, which he finds out is not a mansion, but a theme hotel, an Avengers Space theme hotel, which is kind of funny. So, and that's when he realizes, like, yeah, everything's kind of changed. So then he goes off, starts fighting the, ends up fighting the people, and ends up fighting Ben Grimm, who's been brainwashed, basically, by the people. Or, I guess, blessed was the case it would be, because he got caught up in some wave that was going on some planet. And at the end of the book, which I may or may not, well, it's, this wouldn't be hard to do, but spoiler alert.
Hold on. Ding, 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 ding.
Because due to some flashbacks that were in between last issue and this issue, there was a figure who is actually the quote-unquote bad guy in this, but who is not the original person who was doing this, ends up being someone else from Silver Surfer's past. Someone very near and dear to him at the time.
Okay. I guess we'll find out. I guess I'll find out.
If you know anything about Surfer's history, you know this, because he said it almost every other, you know, he used to say it almost every other issue.
Oh, wow. Now I have an idea who it might be.
So, but it was a good read. It was a pretty decent fight between, I wasn't so much of a fight, between Ben and the Surfer, and the revelation at the end was kind of like, hey, this is a twist.
Okay. So do you have any more?
No, that's it for me.
All right. So I've only got two more to talk about. Or three more, actually, just very quickly. Amazing Spider-Man number 8. For me, this was a satisfactory ending to the Mr. Negative story arc. The art was a fill-in. It's not Giuseppe Camuncoli on this.
Bafogni?
What's that?
Bafogni?
Yeah, it's another Italian person. You know, they're just keeping Spider-Man in Italy right now, or at least the art chores. You know, like I said, it was a satisfactory ending, nothing too crazy. Extraordinary X-Men number 5. For me, this is the first miss for Jeff Lemire on his Extraordinary X-Men run so far. This was a pretty, you know, it does explain. What it does do is it serves to explain what's wrong with Nightcrawler, because Nightcrawler seems to be suffering from a form of post-traumatic stress disorder, and we see why, but I just did not think this was an effective story, and I thought Nightcrawler was made of sterner stuff. But there may be more to it, but I felt like this is the first miss for Lemire on this run so far. I've been saying that Extraordinary X-Men is the X book to follow, but this seems like this is the first kind of off issue. The last book I'll talk about is Uncanny Inhumans number 5. I just wanted to say that this issue served to kind of explain the master plan of the Inhumans. I know it's been set up before, but this issue, there is a very good summary done by a Medusa that kind of serves to unify what's happening in all new Inhumans, and even in the different storylines in Uncanny Inhumans. Basically, you know, we have this master plan explained, and we also have the introduction of Black Bolt's Quiet Room, which is a concept that was created in the Secret Wars series, and it's now been transported into the Marvel Universe proper. It's got a great setup. Basically, the Quiet Room is a bar that Black Bolt runs that is supposed to be a neutral ground, and he's the enforcer of the neutrality of it, where you know, bad guys and good guys can come together and, like, play cards and, you know, kind of settle disputes. And if things get out of hand, Black Bolt will take care of business. Well, it turns out things start to get out of hand very quickly in this issue, and we are left with a cliffhanger of Black Bolt smiling. And I think we know what that might mean, you know, at the, you know, for the beginning of the following issue.
All right. I've got two to throw out for rapid fire. We had Squadron Supreme, number 4.
Mm-hmm.
I still really enjoy this book a lot. We found out that one of the characters from an alternate universe is actually a different character from a different universe who's been masquerading this whole time as part of an evil plan. There was a scene in issue 2 that's actually referenced. You got one of those little editor's notes with a little asterisk saying, didn't you see this in issue 2? Where a deal was struck between this character and a villain of the Marvel Universe, and that comes to a head here. We find out basically why Weird World has suddenly gotten some more attention in the Marvel Universe. There's a villain there who's you know, working his magic, so to speak, trying to take over, building an army to conquer Earth. So it is satisfying. I still really like this book, and it leaves some questions. You think a character may not have survived this issue, so we'll have to wait and see. Because it is alternate universe characters, they can bump them off, and it's not as big of a deal. So, and then Carnage, I made the mistake of reading this week.
Oh, no!
This is the end, apparently, of this current arc, and the next issue starts a brand new arc. You just read the story, and everything's going along, and then it just kind of ends, and there are some plot holes that don't get filled, and some issues that aren't really explored. It's just over. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess that's the end of this. So it started out with this idea that they were going to take down Carnage by going to this mine, and they were sending in these troops to defeat him, and you had this kind of horror movie feel of being trapped in this, you know, area, kind of like the movie Alien, or Aliens, I guess, is a little bit better. But as it's gone on, it's just kind of lost its focus, and we got to the end here. There were cultists of the Darkhold book, if you remember that, from Marvel in the 90s. That book makes its reappearance, and Carnage wants to get a hold of it, but someone's ripped out a page of it, and you think it's going somewhere, and it just doesn't. It just,
wow.
Like I said, it just ends. So I have no idea. I don't know. I didn't check to see if the writer was changing on the next issue or something. If maybe it's like a quick, you know, just like, okay, we're going to finish this real quick and go on to something else with the hopes that maybe they can get numbers back up on it or something. But this was not good. I'll just say that.
Okay.
That's all I got. All
right. I think we are done with our reviews. I think we got everything.
Clicks of the week?
Yeah, clicks of the week time.
Already said mine. Prime Man Iron Fist. Number 1. Great book. Go grab it.
I'm going that route as well.
Oh, so torn. For Power Man Iron Fist.
Yeah, I'm torn. I liked it, but I didn't have as much fun reading that as I did Web Warriors and Spider-Woman, and those are the two that I'm trying to decide between, Thor number 4 also.
Well, I'm actually going to go with Web Warriors, actually, as my...
Nice!
That's what I'm choosing this week.
That's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm contemplating choosing that just to make your the image making process easier for you. one less image for you to edit so that we can tweet these out. I was going
Spider Woman or
Spider Woman 4 too. Man, you know what? I'll be slightly contrarian. I'll go with Spider-Woman number 4.
Hey, yay! I'm glad
that go wrong with it. Exactly.
Yeah. Spider-Woman number 4 was really good this week. I give. I'm about to misstate the creator's name again. Who's on Spider-Woman right now?
Hopeless.
Hopeless. Yeah. Hopeless. Hopeless has hope on this book.
I get to be very creative with the episode title. I jamming all these names together.
That's awesome.
Well, as long as we can all get along like a family.
Oh, I knew he was going to do that. Doggone it.
Fiddle faddle!
And I want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight's episode of Comic Book Chronicles.
I was going to say, David F. Walker is going to love listening to this. We need to tweet him and tell him to listen.
Let's see. Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need.
Yep.
Agent 70 is at Agent underscore 70.
Yeah.
And Doug is at PCN underscore dirt.
Woo. And I got my press pass for C2E2.
Wow. Nice. We're getting press passes now. We're on a roll.
Well, yeah, this is like the fifth or sixth year in a row I've gone this press, so. But anyway.
There you go.
And with that, we'll be back next week with another episode of Comic Book Chronicles. And we are signing off.
Hey!